You've heard me talk about Morning Kick, used by former karate champion Chuck Norris. It's a daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes similar to strawberry lemonade, and I enjoy it. I know I don't eat as many vegetables as I should, but Morning Kick has helped me make up for that, and I feel great. I have more energy and better digestion. It's an easy part of my morning routine. My wife started taking it as well. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris today. We are now live on the Conversations That Matter podcast for a Saturday show. It is a beautiful Saturday, kind of a lazy Saturday afternoon here. And I hope you're having a good time doing whatever you're doing this weekend. I know many of you will probably be listening at different times in the weekend. Maybe you'll be listening even on Monday of next week. But I didn't get to do one yesterday because I was in New Jersey for the majority of the day at a doctor's appointment. And it was just too much when I got home. And so today I thought we would take some time, do a podcast. If there's any questions, please feel free to put them in the live chat. I don't have this particular podcast, and actually I don't think I've had any this week open for the patrons to call in, which is normally a feature that I like to include. It's just been a busy week, and I need to manage my time with the podcast and make them a little shorter, like at least make sure they're under an hour. So this won't be a very long podcast. I just want to share a few clips. I'm going to dabble in some politics, some national politics here, and don't expect that I'm going to do that an awful lot. And I feel like I need to justify why I'm going to do it, just because after 2020, what's the point, John? Why even bother to follow these things? And they're going to be discussed either way. They're going to be, even if you're a pastor and people in your church are going to be discussing this and wondering what's the right option for them as Christians, for them as citizens of the country and the region and the town and wherever you live, what's the best approach? And it's becoming a more complicated and difficult question, I think. It used to be a little more simple in some ways. And in some ways, it still is simple when you get to the general election, when you have the Democrats going so farther and farther and farther left. And it's just an obvious you can't vote for them once they reach those levels. I was talking to someone actually earlier this week about this, and I said, look, I think there are some probably regions of like rural West Virginia or somewhere where there still might be some like pro-life Democrat candidates and so forth. But once you get to the national spotlight, those people are weeded out. You just don't have it anymore. It's a thing of the past. And it's just fundamentally a pagan understanding that they want to bring and force really on the rest of us. So it's not an option. And so you're only left with really the only option, unless you're going to vote for third party. But if you want to actually see a candidate win, you end up having to support whoever the GOP nominee is, pretty much. And so that's just what we're dealing with. And the GOP nominees seem to be getting worse and worse, at least. And I'm looking back even beyond my own lifetime, looking back. I mean, just men of character aren't really around as much as they used to. And I had a conversation with someone this morning. I won't say who, but someone with some influence, will say, who heard what I had to say earlier this week. If you haven't caught it, I did an audio podcast. On Mondays, I've been releasing audio podcasts, not on the video, but I did an audio podcast on leadership. And he appreciated it. And we just had this whole discussion about how there are men who would make good leaders, who are faithful in the little things, let's say, like in their home or their church, but they're disqualified at early stages from ever advancing to the point of being national leaders or even leaders in national organizations, or even maybe even being professors at a college or something, even if it's Christian. It's just the way it is. True leadership, and when I say that, I'm not talking about the pop leadership industry, but true masculine virtue that stands on truth and doesn't sway and stands up for the identity of its people and that kind of thing. That's not really exactly in high demand in institutions. And there's reasons for this. It's a problem that needs to be spelled out and then rectified somehow. But we need good Christian and conservative institutions that have some credibility. We need to have even places of higher learning that if someone comes from those places and you know they have a degree from those places, it carries with it a sense that that person is going to be principled and that and they're not just a hack, which is what I would say even at most Christian places where probably even people who are well-meaning and don't want to produce hacks, that's ending up, it's what they're producing. They're people who are good at ingratiating themselves to authority and power. They end up climbing the ranks. And that's what we get, unfortunately, much of the time when it comes to the presidential level. When you get up to the point of running for president, you have you have climbed the ranks to a certain point. And I think that's one of the things people appreciated about Donald Trump was he hadn't climbed those ranks, at least. He climbed ranks in the business world, which has its own set of problems, but he wasn't one of the people. He didn't like identify with the people in Washington. He wasn't one of them. He was an outsider and they didn't have dirt on him. They didn't control him. He didn't have favors he owed to them. And I think that's one of the main things that made him attractive. And there was other things too, but anyway, so why talk about this? I should probably actually give you the sponsor for this podcast. And then I'll talk about why I'm going to talk about this to begin with. And then we're going to talk about, I'm going to get into some of these actual clips. I think I have like six of them that I want to share with you. Just the popular clips that were on Twitter, people were sharing from the forum that happened, the first GOP presidential forum. But before we get to that, sponsor for this particular podcast, TruthNigeria.com, TruthNigeria.com. If you go to the website, it's got a lot of news about Nigeria, and it's sponsored by Equipping the Persecuted, which is really the main sponsor of this podcast. But Nigeria Truth is a news website, and it'll give you updates in real time about what's happening over there. Right now, actually today on the 15th, Nigerian army charged with extrajudicial killing. So if you click on it, there's a whole article here, I'm not going to read the whole article, but basically it's talking about some developments within the military in Nigeria. So it says there's vigilante groups, which of course this is the problem with the Christian villages. They're being attacked by these Muslim vigilante groups that are not actually law enforcement. They don't represent the Nigerian government, but they're coming in and acting like there's some kind of like a private military or a vigilante group, and they're not accountable. And says for persecuted Christians in Nigeria's war-torn middle belt, their only hope for survival are the volunteer neighborhood watch forces. These brave community members, often untrained and carrying homemade rifles, put their lives on the line every day, facing off against superior numbers of terrorists armed with assault rifles. So you have you have these people who are coming in who are it identifies them as Muslim terrorists, but they're unaccountable. They're causing all this mayhem. And then we have a problem in Nigeria with the government not actually being able to or doing its job to protect these persecuted Christians. And so it's winding up that these villagers are forced, if they want to defend themselves, to try to train their own people and equip them as best they can. And this is a whole article about that if you want to know more. TruthNigeria.com is doing good work. They're cranking out stuff every few days, which is great. And they're doing the work, honestly. I was just on the phone with Judd Saul this morning, who's the founder of Equipping the Persecuted, and he's the one that founded this website as well. They're doing the work that other ministries, quote unquote, are not doing in that area. And I don't want to get out ahead of myself with this because I know that there's more information that I'm sure that's going to come out about this. But some of the organizations that many of you might even support that say that they might even report on what's happening in Nigeria, this basically genocide against Christians, they are unfortunately, they're not offering the help. Sometimes they even say they're offering. And it's almost scandalous. It really, from what Judd's told me, Equipping the Persecuted is the group in Nigeria that's doing work. as far as a Christian organization. And these other organizations that say they're doing it aren't, and it's a real problem. So anyway, check it out, truthnigeria.com. All right. Well, let's talk about this presidential candidates forum a little bit. And let me just first say why I'm doing this. I'm doing it because, like I said in the opening of the podcast, you are going to be hearing this kind of talk regardless. So even if you don't think it matters, these conversations are still going to take place. And it would be helpful to probably have something positive to contribute to them. The other thing is, even if it's a foregone conclusion, what's going to happen in 2024, this seems to be still the only mechanism, or the main mechanism, that is used to identify the leaders who will try to do something to resist it. So in other words, even if you're not creating a president, let's say, and I know some of you are pretty, you're red-pilled or black-pilled on that and just think like there's no point, but there are secondary things going on here. It's not just that it's not just running for president. It's also running for who's going to be the opposition to the Democrat leader, whoever that happens to be. So there is a point to it in that way. And I'm not saying it's all justified. I'm not even saying it's ideal or it should be the way it is. I don't frankly even like the primary process and how we do it in every way. But I think that it's happening regardless of whether we agree with the way it's going. And it is informative. It at least tells us who to look to lead us moving forward. It captures at least the Republican primary, who the conservatives in the country are likely to rally behind. And of course, there's more than just conservatives in the GOP, but that's where the only home that conservatives seem to have in any major party. So I think it's important for those reasons. And so when you're, I'll just tell you, I'm going to participate in the primary, even though actually I'm a registered conservative, so I'm not even a Republican. But I think so in my house, my wife's registered Republican, I'm registered conservative, but not all states have that advantage. In New York, there is a conservative party. So, and they both have primaries. And so we're going to be figuring out who gets the conservative party's endorsement in the general. Right. But if you're a Republican, same thing. And whether it's a caucus or a primary vote or whatever, however it works, I would encourage you participate, even if you don't think the end result, so in other words, don't participate with the illusion that like everything is above board, because we know it's not in the general, especially, but participate knowing that you at least are trying to preserve or maintain or keep or even promote leaders who are going to be more aggressive and better for the Republican side, for the conservative cause or whatever. So that is, I think, a reason to vote that is not, that doesn't have any delusions of grandeur attached to it. So with that said, there are several issues, obviously, and I debated which ones to cover, but I decided to cover mainly just the questions that Tucker Carlson asked and this Blaze TV sponsored candidates forum on Ukraine. And I think that's become a big issue because it shows where a candidate's priorities are. Honestly, it's not about being pro Ukraine or pro Russia, like as far as their dispute and whether or not what should happen, what should the final result of that be? It's about what are candidates taking their responsibility seriously to protect Americans. That, I mean, those are the people that they're running to essentially have the job eventually of being commander in chief, of protecting a certain place, not every place, just a certain place. So you're not running to be the president of Ukraine. You're running to be the president of the United States, right? So I think this has become a big question because some conservatives are saying they feel left behind even by their own party when the party is spending billions and billions and billions of dollars in Ukraine, sending all kinds of money over there, all kinds of military equipment over there. And we have severe problems in our own country and they seem to be getting worse. We have our own crime problems and our inner cities are, some of them are war zones themselves, and yet we seem to be more concerned about Ukraine. And it seems so easy to get funding for Ukraine and to send all this equipment over there, but yet to deal with problems actually in our own country seems difficult. So So someone says, please quit implying the election was rigged beyond the media participation. Yeah, well, I've done several episodes on this, so it's not like it's the, I don't know if you're a new listener to the podcast, but you can go back and watch the episodes I did on this. And it is very, it is obvious, especially when you look at some of the metrics of like, I'm not going to redo all this, by the way, for the most of you have heard me talk about this and you don't want me to talk about it more right this second. But when you win like 11 out of 12 bellwether counties, right? When you have more votes than you did even 4 years previous, and more votes than the history of presidential elections, except for the person who beat you, there is some suspicions that's created by those metrics. And then when you add to that all the stuff that came out afterward, and I got to be careful what I say on YouTube here, so just realize that. But all the video evidence and the evidence of fraud that in various places in major cities, it just becomes pretty obvious that there was, even if you don't think, and I do think that I do think that Trump actually did, if things were above board, he would have won the general election with the Electoral College. I do think that is probably the case. But even if you don't think that, even if you think, oh, that's too far fetched, you have to admit there was a lot of below board activity going on in some of the major cities and some of these swing states, especially. So anyway, not to get off track on that, but I figured I saw the comment and I invited everyone. Hey, comment if you have something to say. Let's get into it. Let's talk about some of these clips. I think we're going to start with the one that's being shared more than any other clip. And that's a clip of Mike Pence. Mike Pence is running for president. And here's what Tucker Carlson asked him.
President, you are distressed that the Ukrainians don't have enough American tanks. Every city in the United States has become much worse over the past 3 years. Yeah. Drive around. There's not one city that's gotten better in the United States. Right. And it's visible. Our economy has degraded. The suicide rate has jumped. Public filth and disorder and crime have exponentially increased. Right. And yet, your concern is that the Ukrainians, a country most people can't find on a map, who've received tens of billions of U.S. tax dollars, don't have enough tanks. Right. I think it's a fair question to ask, like, where's the concern for the United States in that?
Well, it's not my concern. Tucker, I've heard that routine from you before, but that's not my concern. I'm running for president of the United States because I think this country's in a lot of trouble. I think Joe Biden has weakened America at home and abroad. And as president of the United States, we're going to restore law and order in our cities. We're going to secure our border. We're going to get this economy moving again. And we're going to make sure that we have men and women on our courts at every level that will stand for the right to life and defend all the God-given liberties enshrined in our Constitution. Anybody that says that we can't be the leader of the free world and solve our problems at home has a pretty small view of the greatest nation on earth. We can do both. And as president of the United States, we will secure our border, we will support our military, we will revive our economy and stand by our values, and we will also lead the world for freedom under my administration. I promise you.
Amen. Vice President Mike Pence, thank you very much.
Okay, so that's probably the clip that's being shared around more than any other clip that I've seen. And that's actually from Mike Pence's Twitter account. I wanted to make sure I got his, because he said he was taken out of context, and here's the full context. So there you go, there's the full context. I do want to give him the benefit of the doubt when he said that's not my concern. I don't know that it's kind of debatable what he was saying there. Was he saying that the United States isn't his concern? I don't think he was saying that, because he follows it up with all of these, he's going to make the United States better, basically. So what's he saying? He's saying that I think what the narrative that Trump, that Tucker is giving to him, the narrative that it's a problem that we're giving all this aid to Ukraine when we're ignoring our own people. He's saying that that's not his concern. I think that's what he was trying to say, that Tucker's narrative isn't his concern. I don't know. It was an odd thing to say. And of course, when you're a politician and you talk a lot, you will say some odd things sometimes. But Mike Pence doesn't even seem to be backpedaling at all to try to rectify this. He's doubling down. He's saying that this is what he believes, and he was taken out of context. And really, though, I don't think any of the context that he puts in there helps him at all, because he's trying to say that it's a pipe dream. It sounds like a pipe dream. We can do all of these things, and it's all vague. None of it's really concrete. And I understand you have to have an overriding vision, but you also need concrete ways to get there. And I think he didn't actually answer Tucker's objection. Tucker's trying to say, when you're hamstrung by billions of dollars being put to Ukraine, and you're already in debt, and you already have crime problems and illegal migration problem, and you don't have the manpower on the border to actually enforce the border or to deport people, or to even like the dates for even showing up in court for your for illegal aliens who come across the border now, I think in some cases are even years in advance. So like these people are just left at the very least for months at times to just be in America, and then they disappear, and we don't have the manpower to do anything about that, but we're going to be sending all this. It makes no sense. Let's get our own house in order first. And Mike Pence we can do all this stuff. We can, I guess, put all the resources that we have into Ukraine while also putting resources in the United States. Where are these resources coming from? Right. There's no actual concrete. Here's what I'm going to do. It's just a lot of talk. It's a lot of, you know, rah, rah America, but where's the meat? There isn't. And I do think that this is bad for Mike Pence. Like I do look at this and I'll be honest. I immediately dismiss him in my mind. I'm like, yeah. And I already didn't care for Mike Pence, but after that, I'm just like, why would I? Why would I? Like, it's my money, right? It's your money. It's those who are paying taxes. Their money is going to the central authority to then do what? What do we expect the central authority to do? Well, protect us is like the number one thing. And that's what's not happening. That's not happening in our country to the extent it should be at all. So if they're not even protecting us, then why are we spending all this money for another nation to protect itself? At least in the name of that other country. So that was Mike Pence's, and that might have been one of the worst clips. We also, though, I just want to share with you some other clips from this particular candidates forum from other candidates. So here's Tim Scott. Now, not all these questions are the same, but they're all kind of related to Ukraine.
The Third World War, very quickly. So why not force a peace?
How would you do that?
Well, you could tell Ukraine, and they are a client state of the United States, without American backing, there's kind of no Ukraine. We're literally paying the salaries of their bureaucrats. We want you to sit down, as they tried to do, but were stopped by our government, and stop this war. Yeah. And reach a peace as one does, where both sides, you know, concede some of their interests. Like, why wouldn't that be in our interest to do that?
I think the faster we get to peace, the better off we are. What we don't want to do, from my perspective, is allow ourselves to ask for a premature peace that cannot be achieved as the alliances continue to come together. To the extent that we can find our path out of this situation, the better off we are.
So what's the point at which we'll know that we've achieved our goal? Just and I say that within the context of having watched 20 years of occupation in Afghanistan, where nobody could answer the question, what's the point?
Yes.
And no one in Congress ever asked that question, amazingly. So what is the specific goal here?
Yeah, so I would say that the objective should be for Zelensky and Ukraine to be able to achieve victory by maintaining as much of their territory as they possibly can, and then seeing the resources that we've deployed, along with our Western alliances, achieving the peace that I believe comes when you get these two folks to sit down and have a conversation that allows them to determine where those lines will be drawn for the next 100 years.
Okay, so this just to me shows profound ignorance, and I think Tim Scott is more briefed on this situation than I am. Obviously, it is red. Like, that's the thing. Like, I don't think he's actually. I can't fathom that he's actually ignorant about these things, but the sound bites that he's given, and it seems like he's awkward. He's trying to kind of find his way through many of the questions Tucker asked. It wasn't just this one. He thinks you can just kind of get these two guys to sit down, and Ukraine, he doesn't specify concretely. He doesn't say like, well, why don't we try to get a deal where like Russia can keep those areas like the Crimea, like the eastern parts of Ukraine, like the Donbas region, that have historically been associated with Russia. In fact, if you pull those areas, they all they all say that they're part of Russia, that they look to Russia to protect them as their defender more than Ukraine. They're culturally aligned. Why don't we create peace by letting those people? This used to be popular sovereignty. It used to be the thing, right? So we allow some popular sovereignty here, and we figure out a way to then Ukraine keeps the rest of its, right? Like he could try to say something like that. Now, Zelensky won't find that at all to be a reasonable negotiation, right? And Putin won't find it to be a reasonable negotiation to say, hey, give back all the territory that you've taken from Ukraine, from Zelensky. So it's like, what are you going to have these guys talk about? Like, you're just going to sit down and they're going to go along with your plan. What makes you think that? I mean, have we learned nothing from history is the other question I have about this. I mean, the Budapest Memorandum of 1994, the Minsk agreements and Normandy format, these are all things that the Russians and the Ukrainians have come to the table for decades, and agreements have been reached. And generally it's Russia. I'll just say it from this point, because I don't want to say anything that's like going to pigeonhole me into being pro-Russia or pro-Ukraine, because I think there's enough good and bad. I don't even know if there's good. there's enough bad going on that I don't even feel comfortable like taking a side, quote unquote. I know that's terrible. I should all be on Ukraine's side, but I'm not, like, for various reasons. And I made a podcast about this when this first started over a year ago, so you can go back and look at that if you're interested. But the Russians feel that they make agreements, they come to the table, and Ukraine doesn't honor them. And if that's the case, if Ukraine's pursuing being part of NATO, which of course they are now, big time, if they are, you know, fine with all the, you know, the laboratories, all the Wuhan style laboratories that were in Ukraine before Russia invaded, if they want all this stuff on Russia's border that threatens Russia, they see that as breaking previous precedents and so forth. And so trust is, it's like when you in counseling as a pastor, right? Like if you have two people who aren't getting along in their marriage, even, and this isn't a marriage, but like any relationship, and there's a history of broken trust, it's not simple to just give some kind of like to throw out there, wouldn't it be nice if we could just, Ukraine could just keep as much of its territory as it can specify, right? And we'll just get them at the table to talk about it. It's just naive. Like, it doesn't really present, it doesn't present an actual plan, I think is what I'm trying to say. So anyway, that's that was Tim Scott's answer to that. And then you had, let's see, there were some better answers, I thought, from some other candidates. Let's talk about this one. This is from Nikki Haley.
Blew up the Nord Stream pipeline.
I mean, I don't know.
I'm not claiming you did it. I'm just kidding. I don't know. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Do you know who did it?
Seems pretty obvious. It was backed by the Biden administration, I would say. I mean, I think all the evidence suggests that, but I wasn't there. But I mean, that seems like a huge step. This is the largest industrial sabotage in history, sent more carbon in the atmosphere than any act ever. And like, there's weirdly no curiosity about who did it. And I think that's strange. What do you think?
There's a lot of things that are strange with the Biden administration. This is the first one.
I guess what I'm really saying is, if you were running against the Biden administration, to do something like that and shaft our closest allies in the world, which would be Western Europe, and deprive them of the energy they need to run their manufacturing sector and destroy their economy, which it is in the process of doing, like, that's a major sin to have done something like that. You just betrayed our allies, and no one on the right is accusing the Bidens of what they clearly did. So I don't know why.
Can I just say, no one is ticked. None of these guys are ticked. Like, that's one of the things that I think is hard, is there are middle Americans footing the bill for Ukraine who are ticked that their money is going for this. Meanwhile, their towns are being ravaged by crime. And illegal aliens coming in and economic difficulties. And yet to see their money and their grandkids' money going to Ukraine, they're ticked about it. Like, they're angry, and legitimately so. There's a righteous indignation in this. And none of these candidates seem so out of touch with that. Like, none of them are angry about this. And that's, I think, what you saw there with Nikki Haley. It's just like, she has this look on her face. Like, and style does mean something now in presidential politics. It's not just the audio and what she's saying on paper. It's the visual of what's her emotional reaction to this. Even if she doesn't want to lay blame on the Biden administration because she doesn't know, let's say, 100% that they were the ones behind the Nord Stream, there should be like an anger that like this isn't something that the Biden administration seems, they're not concerned about what the effects of this and the effect this has on the energy sector of Western Europe and how this creates more tension and more strife and people dying because they don't have the heat in the winter. There's no like being upset about this and the possibility that we could do this and we're not, and it even seems suggestible should be make someone upset somewhere, right? I think that's how people are feeling. Yes, Jimmy Starfish says it's not even our money going to Ukraine; it's our great 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 grandchildren, people who will be born in 2060. Yeah, yeah, I know it seems that way. Okay, so Jerry Henson says blowing up the Nord Stream was a war crime. Yeah, so. Who has the facilities to do this? We've talked about this before in the podcast, but who seems obviously the one behind it? Who claimed responsibility? I think it wasn't a Joe Biden, like an off moment, like one of his off senile moments when he just even like kind of said that we did that. I think I remember something like that, but I know the Russians think we did it. All right, so. Let's see. It says this forum, this is Frank Blackowitz, who's weighing in. This forum shows a clear difference of crowds. The candidates are playing to a DC crowd and are not in touch with the common person. And they should be in touch with the common person. They're in Iowa at a religious. This is a Christian forum of some kind. It's sponsored by The Blaze, but it's supposed to be this religious right Christian forum. Okay, so who else haven't we heard from? Let's go to Vivek. I think Vivek and DeSantis had better answers on this. Now, I feel like especially Vivek had some not great answers on some other things, but on this question, it seems like they did a lot better.
And so what I ask is, how are we actually going to end this conflict in a way that advances U.S. interests? And the thing that puzzles me, Tucker, is nobody in either party is talking about this right now. The Russia-China alliance is the single greatest threat that the U.S. actually faces today. And we are pushing Russia closer into China's arms by actually continuing to arm Ukraine. So what I've said is that I would negotiate a deal that ends the Ukraine war, frees the current lines of control. Yes, that means giving part of the Donbas region to Russia. I would make a hard commitment that NATO never admits Ukraine to NATO. And those seem like unspeakable words in the certainly Republican donor class, but we get something greater in return, which is that Putin in that case would have to exit his military partnership with China and remove nuclear weapons from Kaliningrad, which border Poland, and get the Russian military out of Cuba and Venezuela and the West. And this is a deal that Putin should do because he ends up winning. He gets things that he doesn't have today. But it secures American interests, too. And I do think in a weird way, it does take an outsider to get that job done. Because if you want someone to fix a problem, you don't turn over the keys to somebody who actually broke the thing in the first place. If you want to fix it, maybe have somebody who didn't break it in the first place. And that's part of why I'm in this race.
All right. So that might have been the best answer on this question. There was another clip I was going to claim from Vivek that wasn't as great on American identity. And he seems to buy into this proposition nation stuff. But I will say on the foreign policy, generally the people who buy into the prop nation end up thinking that our job is to spread democracy and Americanism wherever that is and make good Americans of the people in other countries or something. And that's part of our foreign policy. And you don't see that as much with Vivek. And he has an actual, what did you see with what he said? It was concrete. We're going to give him the Donbass. We're going to make sure that Ukraine doesn't become part of NATO. Some of these issues that they've had that have been talking points since the Minsk agreements, we're going to actually do something to make ensure that both sides get some of what they want. We reach a negotiation and at least it's something. It's better. Maybe that's not even the right path, but it's better. It's better. Okay. And maybe someone's saying that maybe Putin would never do that. Yeah, maybe he wouldn't. I don't know. Putin might not. But at least if you talk tough and you say like there's going to be consequences for A, B, and C, and there are real consequences. And it's not just us pouring resources into Ukraine. Like that can't be the consequence, creating a slush fund over there. But you know, I don't know. I'm not saying I have like clear answers on this either, because this is a can that's been kicked down the road so many times. Trust has been broken in every direction, right? But if you, I think Vivek is right in this. If you do have a third party, if you have someone who is outside that donor class, he's probably right. An outsider could probably do more because there's, it's a new commodity. Maybe trust has not been broken quite as much. If it was like a Bush, let's say, you know, trust isn't there. If it was someone, you know, Biden, trust isn't there. But there could be trust with someone who's not a known commodity, who is opposed by the people that you don't trust. And so maybe someone like that could work a deal out. I think it's significant that this, there was a war in Eastern Ukraine during the Trump administration that we didn't hear about much, but it, not the full scale stuff you're seeing now. And I think it's because in part Trump was in office. That was enough to deter. And Trump has a little better of a negotiating, well, a lot better of a negotiating kind of temperament than Biden. So unfortunately, Trump didn't weigh in on this. It would have been interesting to hear his answer on this. But that what Vivek said actually makes at least rational sense because you're giving Russia some of what they've wanted. And if you can pull back Ukraine, and that's probably more the way it's going to have to happen, is like, if Ukraine wants to keep any of the resources that we've given them, if they want any good relationship with the United States, if they want to be trading partners at all, like you have to honor this, Ukraine, right? Like that's probably the better, the leverage that the United States has. So here's, who haven't we played yet? We haven't played Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis gives actually a pretty decent answer too.
Single-handedly of America's foreign policy. So with that in mind, I have to ask you about Ukraine. So in the spring, you described the war in Ukraine as a, quote, territorial dispute. You issued a statement saying it was a territorial dispute that was not central to America's national interest. There was an outcry over this. And then pretty soon after, you described, you seemed to change your view and describe Putin as a war criminal and say that it was central to America's foreign policy. Why did you change and where are you now?
So the last part I did not say. I served in Iraq during the Iraq campaign in Fallujah. I was attached to U.S. Navy SEAL Team 1. And remember, it started on what WMD. Then we had Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Then it was create a democracy. Then it was that. And so the lesson that I learned from there is if you're going to commit to do military, whether it's aid or whether it's troops, you need to have a concrete idea of what you're trying to achieve. And so from the time I got out of the sandbox and landed back in the United States 15 years ago until the present, I've always felt that. And so my critique of the DC foreign policy elite is that they are doing a blank check policy without telling us when we will have achieved our objective. And I believe that today, and I believe that then. Now, because you dissent from the DC foreign policy elite, they then try to smear you and say, oh, you must be for Putin. I've always thought Putin's a bad guy. I still think he's a bad guy, but that's a separate question for a leader who's got to look at the world in very clear-eyed glasses. You know that it's not all peaches and cream out there, and you have to make a judgment about what's in America's national interest. And so that's the position that I believe, and I also believe that I wish the DC elites cared as much about our border as they do about the Ukraine-Russia border. Because there's people pouring into this country. We have people dying from fentanyl overdose. The cartels are running the show. And what I've said is, this is something on day one, declare a national emergency, mobilize all resources, including the military, stop the invasion, yes, build the wall, but most importantly, authorize the Border Patrol, authorize our...
All right, we're going to stop it there. I think this is also a really good answer. This is putting the prioritizations in the right place. We talked about the Order of Mars a few times this week, the Order of Loves, Augustine. And, you know, if you're, especially if you're in a position of being a civil servant, your first allegiance, your first order of love is going to be for your country, for that jurisdiction that you have. And it can't be for other places. You can't prioritize places that you're not in charge of over the place that God has charged you with. And so so I think this is a fundamental issue, even though this is not one of the issues that I think conservative Christians generally think about. We do need to think about issues like this. They are important. People are dying. People's lives are hanging in the balance over things like this. But it's also just about protecting our national identity. It's about protecting our vital security interests in this country and making sure that we don't get too stretched thin, which is what's happened now, where we're economically and militarily, we're in, have our hands in all these other pots, and we can't actually attend to the basic responsibilities that all nations need to be attending to. So, so I think this is just one issue. Okay. One issue to look at. Let's face it, none of these candidates are going to be probably that great on some of the issues that as Christians we care about. In fact, I don't know that Tucker even asked them about things like gay marriage, right? That should be a topic of conversations, but most conservatives have just kind of like, if they have any national platform, they've just kind of given up on that. They think profaning marriage should be, some of them, constitutionally protected. It's very interesting to me. They think they're not woke, but that's kind of woke. So like we have to, I think no matter what, if you're going to vote Republican, you're going to get someone who's probably not going to be with you on everything, and someone who's probably going to be even somewhat compromised on some fundamental moral issues. That's probably going to be what happens. I don't think any of these candidates are perfect at all. And I don't think, I don't know that any of them are going to be for a very Christian vision. I mean, someone like a Vivek can't be. Vivek is, I mean, this is a funny thing, is he knows how to talk to conservative Christians, but he's Hindu. He's Hindu. I mean, as Christians, I mean, the official line on Hinduism is they worship demons. That's the official line on Hinduism. It's not, we're trying to be mean. It's just, that's been the longstanding understanding of what that is. It's idolatry. It is certainly not, but he tries to like put it in this abstract realm where he's like, well, I'm about American values, right? And that kind of thing. And so he's good on this question, but can he be good on some of the other things? Maybe not as much. And so we have to exercise a lot of wisdom. That's going to be the thing with all of this. We have to exercise a lot of wisdom. And this is, I'm hopefully just helping you get that process started as we examine some of these candidates. So here's a reaction. I thought this was really good. And by the way, foreshadowing, I'm going to have this individual, Aaron McIntyre, on the podcast next week. So if you have questions for Aaron McIntyre, if you're a patron, please message me through Patreon. Let me know what kind of questions you have for Aaron. Aaron works at The Blaze, and so I'm excited to have him on next week. But he had this great reaction. He was hosting part of the candidates forum, and this is what he said about Mike Pence.
I was moved because I want a president that looks at me the way that Mike Pence looks at a Ukrainian. I want a president who loves me the way that Mike Pence loves a random Ukrainian he meets when he's over there. That story about the Stinger missiles, man, I wish I was telling that story about the lives of children and family members saved because the border is secure. Mm-hmm. I wish I was hearing that story because the...
It gets better. Well, I don't know if it gets better, but it gets good as he keeps going on there. But his whole point is that he wished that these candidates... It's like the way they look at Ukraine is like, it's so weird. If you really think about it, it is so weird. It's not weird to be concerned about people in another country, right? We just talked about Nigeria on this podcast. It's not weird. And these are brothers and sisters in Nigeria. We actually have a connection because of a spiritual thing here. But it is kind of weird when you like put it on a family level. If you're like, you know, there's a family that's, or an area like there's a inner city area, let's say, or an app. I live on the border of kind of the northernmost reaches of Appalachia, and there's some poverty. So let's say an area like that, and to say, you know, I'm concerned for those people. Okay, sure. Good. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my hard-earned money, and not just my hard-earned money. I'm going to take my children's inheritance, and I'm going to spend it on trying to help those people. Even though I'm not really even going over there, I'm not doing it firsthand. I'm paying someone else to do it. It's not in my backyard. It's not the jurisdiction God's given me. It's not my responsibility directly, but that's what I'm going to do because they're in a plight. And it's like, if you can provide for your family and you can then with a little extra, you can help another family. That's great. We should all do that. But where's your priority? It has to be to your family. It can't be selling off their inheritance for people on the other side of the world. That's really weird. If we saw that on an individual level, we would say that that's a really negligent parent, or that parent's got some kind of a savior complex. Like they're taking their paternal and maternal instincts and they're applying them to people who they're not parents of. Right. That's what we would say. Like that's really weird, but it is strange that in national politics, that is the default setting of our elites. They automatically feel this way about people who they didn't come from, who they have this love for difference. I think, was it Roger Scruton? Someone called it oikonophobia, but this like aversion to home, this aversion to your own people, and this preference for those who are different. It's very strange, but that's what we have. And I don't know that any other countries like outside the West have this. India's about India. China's about China. It's just weird that we're this way. And does it come from a guilt? There's something wrong there. I mean, put in the info sec or the comments section what you think, why you think that is. But there is some kind of like a hang up that we have. Okay, well, that's the podcast for today. Like I said, check out the website, truthnigeria.com. Thanks for hanging out this Saturday afternoon. God bless.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.